more specifically say to the L triangle group. With this presentation, it's just generated by two things, and this is the full presentation that you see over there. You can have a nice geometric interpretation of those permutations. So x, y, and y can be interpreted as a rotation about the vertex. Say if I call this center vertex v, that would be the x would be a rotation about the vertex v by one segment, so by 2 pi over d. XY would be a rotation about the center of a face incident to V. Say if I pick this face and this center, that would be a rotation by the angle of 2 pi over L. And Y would be a rotation about the midpoint of an edge incident to the chosen V and chosen F. So let's say about the midpoint of this edge by the angle of pi. So those are three nice rotations. Well, two of them are just, any two of them are generating actually the group. And the group acts regularly on directed edges. So the action is regular, and you can't have more in the sense of orientation-preserving automorphisms because it's sort of a matter of a little exercise to see that the stabilizer of any directed edge or any half edge in the sense of orientation-preserving automorphisms must be trivial. So this is the biggest group that can act possibly on this map as a group of orientation-preserving automorphisms, and the action is regular on directed edges. Well, with the same accompanying picture, you can also include orientation-reversing automorphisms and speak about the full automorphism group of the tessellation, which is just the extended 2DL triangle group, which I call here ETDL. That's the presentation of the group generated by three involutions, satisfying an extra three relations, and that's it. Again, those C, B, and A can be given a natural geometric interpretation. Now, the entire group of automorphisms, including orientation and reversing, can be thought of acting on directed edges as well, but rather than doing that, I think of it as acting on flags or longitudinally and transversely directed edges. Well, speaking of flags, a flag on a map is a topological triangle with three corners, a vertex, a center of an edge, and a center of a face adjacent to both the vertex and the edge. So this thing would be, say, a flag, a triangle like that. And the group is thought of as a permutation group on flags. Now, those CBA are flips across a fixed edge. So say if I fix this half edge actually, then C would be a flip, a symmetry with respect to this axis. Then along the same edge, so suppose that you divide the that you have an axis going perpendicularly through the center of this edge, and that flip would just flip the map, and through a corner, which means that you draw an axis of symmetry of say a corner, like so, and A would be a reflection with respect to that axis. So that group would act regularly on flags, because again, the stabilizer of a flag, well, any automorphism, if it stabilizes a flag, then it stabilizes all flags. So the stabilizer of a flag must be trivial, and hence this is the largest group you can even think of. And it's the full automorphism group of this tessellation. Now, the triangle group I introduced before is just a normal subgroup of index 2, of course, of the extended triangle group. That's clear. Now, when I want to talk about automorphisms of finite maps, the definition is the same. It's just a permutation of directed edges, if I speak about orientation-preserving automorphisms, or flags, if I want to talk about all automorphisms, which preserves the structure of the map. So that's going to be the same. And speaking about regular and orientably regular maps, they can be introduced in various ways. For example, to say that those groups I talked about just act regularly on the set of directed edges or on the set of flags. There is another way of doing that, and let me indicate that. The tessellations are universal because of this property here. If you fix your type of the map D and L, then all maps of type D prime L prime, L prime, where D prime is a divisor of D and L prime is a divisor of L, can be just identified with the quotient space. So you do the usual quotient space as you would do in topology. And there is a correspondence between all maps and all subgroups of the extended triangle group. So this is the way to generate absolutely all maps of type D prime L prime, where D prime divides D and the L prime divides L. You just form quotient spaces. If you want to talk about orientable maps, you just replace the full triangle group ET by the orientation preserving triangle group by TDL. And this is true even if both D and L are equal to infinity. There are some subtleties with this, but essentially it works. And then you can ask yourself when your automorphism from the upstairs universal tessellation project down to your map formed by taking a quotient. And it turns out that they all project if and only if the group you are working with, the subgroup you are working with, is normal in the big group, in the ET group. And then the automorphism group of your map is simply a quotient group of ET divided out by H. And in this case, I call M a regular map. And equivalently, I could have said that a map on a surface is regular if and only if the automorphism group is regular on flags. But here we have a more or less explicit description of the automorphism group. Anyway, for orientably regular maps, you have a very similar principle. They all arise the way I just described, except you replace the full triangle group ETDL by just the triangle group TDL. And the map, equivalently, then you can say that a map on an orientable surface, any map, is regular if and only if the orientation preserving automorphism group is regular on darts, on directed edges, or half edges, whatever you want. So this is how you can introduce regular maps, and most of this audience, of course, know the regular maps and have met them before. The question that actually has driven this research is whether the regular maps are really the most symmetric maps. Well, in the sense that you are willing to talk only about the automorphisms, then yes, of course they are. But we can think of other ways of preserving the map, which is not really preserving it by automorphisms, and I'm going to call those means external symmetries and talk about those. So here's an example of an external symmetry, it's self-duality. Okay, so just recalling that talking about a regular map of type DL means talking about the quotient group, about the quotient space, take the universe of tessellation and divide out by a normal subgroup, where this normal subgroup is a subgroup, of course, of the extended triangle group. Okay, so here is again the presentation of the extended triangle group, and hence this regular map can be identified by with the automorphism group. I mean, that's the common feature in any combinatorial structure, in any structure at all. If you have a regular action of the automorphism group on the individual object of the structure, then you simply by the regular action can identify the object with the group itself. So this is the way we identify regular maps with actually their automorphism groups. So basically I'm talking about a three generated group generated by three involutions satisfying the three relations as you see them there, possibly some other relations introduced by, of course, factoring out by dividing out by this normal subgroup. Okay. So having made this identification, I can express all properties of my map in terms of this group. So I'm basically looking at presentations of groups of this type, and any property of the map I'd like to talk about can be expressed in terms of this group. And I'd like to talk about dualities. So here we go. You all are familiar with the operation of taking a dual of the map. You simply put it simply, draw, insert a vertex, a new vertex, a new colored vertex in the center of every face, and introduce new edges sort of perpendicularly across the existing old edges, right? This is the way you construct the dual map. Now, in most cases, the dual map will not be isomorphic to the original map, but in some cases it may be isomorphic, in which case we call the map self-dual. In the context of regular maps, since I have identified a regular map with my group here, I should be able to express the property of being self-dual just in terms of this group. And it turns out that the map is self-dual if and only if G admits an automorphism, call it D for duality, that fixes the generator A and interchanges the generators B and C. So basically we are talking about an extra automorphism of this group, and if it's there, your map, your regular map, is self-dual. If it's not there, it's not self-dual. There is another operation of duality which has been considered in the map world, and that's the P3 duality. And again, I think most of you would be familiar with the operation of taking the P3 dual. Basically, you take a map and make all possible closed zigzag walks in this map. So you go left and then right and left and then right, etc. And you decompose the set of directed edges of your map into cycles this way. It's easy to prove. And those cycles are going to be the boundary cycles of closed walks, I should say. Those closed walks would form face boundaries of your new map, and that's called the P3 dual. And again, in most cases, the P3 dual would not be isomorphic to the original map, but in some cases it is, in which case we call the map self-P3 dual. And again, since I'm talking of the regular map, so basically I just identify the map with its automorphism group, as you see here. I should be able to express the property of being self-P3 dual just in terms of this group. And indeed, it's actually here. So a map is self-P3 dual if and only if G has an automorphism, call it P, interchanging B with B, C, and fixing A and C. Now, this is actually a concept that Dan Archdeacon came up with when we did research into this a couple of years ago. He proposed to call a map having trinity symmetry if and only if M is both self-dual and self-P3 dual. Okay, so that's trinity symmetry. Well, having trinity symmetry basically means that it's got six dualities, including the trivial duality. Because if you look at the thing, I've got it here. The two self-dualities actually generate a group, generated by D and T. Well, if you look at the way those things have been defined, then you just see that they are moving BC and BC, and they always fix A. But if you look at the group generated by DC, you see that it's just Z2 cross Z2. It's a Klein-4 group. So the group generated by those dualities is just a group of automorphisms of the subgroup generated by B and C, which is S3. So we just have six of those, including the trivial duality. Just as an aside, if a map is both self-dual and self-P3 dual, then D must be equal to L, so the vertex degree must be the same as face length. And this thing, ABC to the D, must appear among relators here in the presentation of the group. Yes.
Can I object to the name trinity?
Yes, you can.
Because trinity refers to three.
I know.
You can have maps that have a symmetry of a duality or whatever you call it, of order three.
Yes.
Without being self-dual.
Yeah, I know. And you call those. Triality in your paper. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you can object. Right. Okay. Yeah, good point. Anyway, so trinity symmetry appearing again. Sorry. Anyway, so here's a cheap and easy method how you can construct regular maps with trinity symmetry. So here's the proof. Oh, okay. So the theorem says that there exists infinitely many finite regular maps with Trinity symmetry. You begin with this funny looking triangle group ET infinity infinity. So you start with a map having infinite degree and infinite phase length and still being regular in the sense I described. But there are some topological subtleties about how this sits in the, not just the hyperbolic plane, but in the extended hyperbolic plane. But let's leave those things aside. On the group theory level, this is just a presentation of the group. Okay, so it's just a free product of a cyclic group of order 2 with a Klein 4 group. And this group is known to be residually finite. And in general, a group is residually finite if, for any given non-identity element, you can find a normal subgroup of finite index in the entire group, which avoids that favorite element. That's residual finiteness. Since the group is residual finite, it contains actually infinitely many, well, that construction gives you an infinite number of normal torsion-free subgroups of finite index. And I need torsion-free so that none of these generators actually disappear when I do the quotient. So take such a subgroup and hit it by all automorphisms of this funny S3 group, that the group of all the automorphisms of this subgroup generated by B and C. Since N is a normal subgroup finite index, so it's going to be this finite intersection. And this just means that if you take this quotient space, it's going to be a finite regular map. It will have all 6 symmetries, because you've designed your subgroup to be preserved by all these 6 symmetries. End of proof. So we can do this sort of cheating. On the other hand, that sort of cheating does not give you any control about the vertex degree, which is equal to the phase length here. We don't know how to do that. Anyway, this is what Garrett has sort of implicitly mentioned. You can study other things. For example, you can study maps which just admit this external symmetry and its powers, which is just the second power and the trivial thing. So this thing has order 3 in this group, S3, Garrett Jones and Andrew Poulton actually proved that there exist infinitely many finite regular maps admitting the external symmetry PD, but none of the dualities. This is not trivial to prove, and funnily enough, correct me, Garrett, if I'm wrong on this one, but you also don't have a control over degree here. You can compute it in, like, if you consider the your construction over the groups PSL to some power, you can always effectively compute the degree, of course. But you don't have a theorem saying that, say, for this and that degree, we can construct such maps. Yeah. Using covers, yes. So here are some more external symmetries, and that's another cup of tea, its exponents. So let's look at orientably regular maps this time. So let's talk about normal subgroups of the orientation-preserving triangle group, and let's look at the quotient spaces. Right. So orientably regular maps can be identified with their automorphism groups in the same way as the non-orientable or general maps can. So I'm going to identify in what follows orientably regular maps of type DL with groups generated by 2 generators having partial presentations, as you see here. Exponents were introduced, well, name exponent was introduced by Martin and Roman some time ago, and they have quite deep theory about exponents of general maps and then of regular maps in particular. And I just want to stay within the context of orientably regular maps as you see here, and that's why I give you a definition in terms of the group right away. And in terms of the group, a map M with this group has exponent J, which can be anything coprime with D, if this group admits an automorphism that fixes the generator of order 2 and takes X onto X in the J's power. And by the way, those things have been considered before by Steve Wilson, and he called them Hall operators. So the collection of all exponents as defined here is simply a subgroup of the group of units of that D, and is called the exponent of the exponent group of the map. So this is the definition of exponents for me. It's just a different type of automorphism. The taking an exponent, this operation has also, of course, very nice geometric interpretation, and basically it means the following. If this X represented the what we call rotation, that means an automorphism that rotates the map about a fixed vertex by the angle of 2 pi over d, then you replace this geometrically nice rotation by its j's power, so you are going to rotate your map about the angle of 2 pi j over d, which means that, say if you take an edge emanating from a vertex, you don't go to the next edge counterclockwise, but you go to the j's edge counterclockwise and design your rotation, your ordering of edges emanating from a vertex on the surface this way. Of course, this way in general you change the embedding, you may change the surface, you don't change the graph as such, but you change the embedding, and in general the new embedding will not be isomorphic to the original one, but in some cases it is, and this is the case where you call your J an exponent. And again, in the context of regular maps, it just means having this special automorphism of the group. Right. So a trivial consequence of this is, if you want to mess around with presentations, that if you have an exponent, then you should see this relator in the presentation of the group G, or simply because it's going to be an automorphism of the group, well, it takes X to X to the J and fixes Y, so this relator is going to be mapped onto this one and should appear in the presentation, of course. Exponent minus 1 means what we call reflexibility. So you basically replace your map by its mirror image. And again, in general, that may not be isomorphic to the original map. But in case it is, minus 1 is an exponent, and in that case we call the map reflexible. Again, a term invented by Dan Archdeacon when we looked at this, we call an orientably regular map with a full exponent group ZD star kaleidoscopic. Any objections, guys? Good. Okay, so those are kaleidoscopic. Kaleidoscopic means basically all feasible exponents. Okay. Now, are there such things? Yes, there are. But let me discuss both extremes. No exponents, well, no, one is always an exponent, of course, and I'll tell you what almost means, versus the other extreme where you have all exponents, where the maps are kaleidoscopic. So here's a theorem, which we proved a long time ago, saying that for any degree, there are infinitely many orientably regular maps, finite orientably regular maps, with that degree and with a trivial exponent group. This construction is not entirely trivial, and it relies on covering spaces and on forbidding automorphisms in lifted maps. We discovered a method for doing that, and this was the outcome. So I'm not going to comment more on that. Well, if you are willing to allow just the exponent group plus or minus one, so speak about the reflexible maps, but with no other exponents, then again, there is an easy construction which gives you, for any given type, an infinite number of finite orientably regular maps of the given type which are reflexible but admit no other exponents. And here's again a cheatingly easy proof. Well, take your favorite triangle group of type D and L, and again use the fact that it's residually finite. I'm referring to this fact quite often, and it's actually not a very hard theorem because what you do is you just represent, you can represent any triangle group as a matrix group over a very nice ring, which is just an extension of the rationals by some algebraic integers. And in those rings and in those representations, you simply consider then the quotient induced by a suitable ideal in the ring. And that will automatically give you a finite map which will have all the desired properties. So when you want to prove, say, that the group is residually finite, then what you do is, well, pick your favorite element, right, of your group. Well, that's a concrete matrix in your matrix representation, and you just design your ideal you are going to factor by in such a way that it will not contain that element. And it's easy to do. It's much easier than you would think. So this is not really, at this level, a very deep theorem that I'm using. Anyway, so by residual finiteness, we have a normal subgroup of finite index avoiding all small, well, whatever it means, it's a technical term here, powers, because you want to avoid, say, if D has lots of divisors, you want to avoid any power that's a divisor of D, and avoiding all pairs x to the j, y to the l. Remember, those things, if this map had an exponent j, then those relators would have to appear in the presentation. So I make sure at the very beginning that I'm avoiding them by my normal subgroup. That's all I do. And you can't this way avoid minus one, because if x, y to the l is a relator, then automatically x inverse y to the l will be a relator. You can't just get rid of this one, but you can get rid of all the other exponents if you want. So again, it's a cheating easy construction. And that actually, yeah, well, here you have a control over your D and L. It works for every hyperbolic pair at least. And there's another thing which refers to the other extreme. So now I want to construct maps with all exponents, all feasible exponents. And for any D, there exist infinitely many finite orientably regular kaleidoscopic maps of degree D. Again, a cheating construction by residual finiteness. This time, you take the group T, D, infinity, so you allow faces of infinite length as your starting group. And by the way, the underlying graph, which is embedded in the hyperbolic plane here, is a tree, a regular tree of degree D, embedded with infinite faces, nicely. So actually the group, you just lose the third relator in the presentation of the group. This thing is again residually finite, and take a normal torsion-free subgroup, any. And what you do with your normal subgroup, you hit it by all automorphisms that you want to be there, and take the intersection. Now this intersection will of course be preserved by any such automorphism, because it's just by design, right? Where of course alpha j is the automorphism of your group that fixes y and takes x onto x to the j. Basically the underlying idea here is that if you look at the universal tessellation u d infinity, so at this embedding of an infinite tree of degree d in the hyperbolic space, hyperbolic plane, then this embedding allows any exponents, and you just somehow pull down the exponents to your finite map. That's what you do. Okay, then the quotient space is of course a finite kaleidoscopic orientably regular map. Right. So this is how you can actually construct such things. There are other constructions. There are some other explicit constructions for various degrees and phase lengths, which are due to Martin and Roman, Martin Machai, and other people here in this, well, not in this audience. Okay. Okay, now can you marry those two approaches? Can you actually construct kaleidoscopic regular maps with all six symmetries? Not just the three one. Okay. Well, first, you would have to think of the following, for example, if you have an orientably regular map, the Petri operator quite often makes it a non-orientable map. You would have to think of exponents in the context of general maps, on arbitrary surfaces. The corresponding theory was developed by Roman's student, Hujvar, and I'm not going to go into details, and I'll just tell you again in terms of my presentations what that means. So if you have a regular map, so it identified with the group generated by three involutions such with this partial presentation, then I'm going to say that it's got all exponents or it's kaleidoscopic. If G admits an automorphism E sub J for any J in the group of units, that fixes B and C and takes CA onto CA to the J. It's the same as saying that M has the full, in quotation marks, exponent groups. Of course, now this regular map can be orientable or non-orientable. I don't care. It's just a general regular map. And this definition refers to general maps rather than to just orientably regular as it was presented before. So this is how we extend the concept of exponents to general maps. And when you have that, then you, of course, realize that the construction of what I want, finite, of course, kaleidoscopic regular maps with transient symmetry of a given degree, which should be equal, of course, to the phase length in this case, must be equivalent to finding finite groups, as above, that admits the exponent automorphisms E sub J, as introduced here, for every J coprime with D, together with self-duality and self-Petri duality. So you would have to allow all. Now, the problem of doing that from universal tessellations is that there is some incompatibility of the universal objects you are using. For the dualities, it was very handy to use ET infinity infinity, and for the exponents, it was very handy to use the triangle group or the extended. I could have done it with the extended triangle group as well, the infinity. Now, observe that, the exponents work nicely here. It's not obvious what they do here, because if your degree is infinite, meaning taking every jth edge in your rotation means introducing something that's not a bijection on the vertices. On the other hand, those things here are infinitely far from being like self-dual or self-Petri dual. So that's a problem. Equivalently, you could use as universal groups just the extensions, the semi-direct product, as you see them here, but that's just the equivalent approach and it doesn't really help you. And again, the thing I refer to is that you could possibly think of the group of endomorphisms of this group, but it's not clear to me how that could help at the moment. Anyway, so there is a problem of constructing this from, say, some universal object. What you can do is construct such maps by lifting, and this is what we came up with, Dan Archdeacon and Marston Konda. The theorem says that if there is an oriented kaleidoscopic, kaleidoscopic map M of degree D with trinity symmetry, then for any positive integer N, there is an object which is also an oriented kaleidoscopic map with trinity symmetry. Its degree will be dn. So we can sort of multiply. Once we have a starting map, we can sort of multiply the degrees and get an infinite sequence of finite such maps, which are kaleidoscopic and have all sorts of dualities. That's what we can do. More specifically, we can do the following. For every n, there is an oriented map of degree 2n, on 2n squared vertices, such that the map is kaleidoscopic and has trinity symmetry, and its automorphism group has order 8n cubed and has very specific presentation. As you see here, I'm not going to read this. Just to remark that this solved Wilson's conjecture. Steve Wilson conjectured in, I believe it was in his dissertation, that a group with this presentation, so exactly this thing here, has order 8n cubed and is a group of automorphisms of a regular map with all dualities. That was Wilson's conjecture. And, well, of course, we've proved it. And we actually have a totally independent proof of the fact that this group has order 8n cubed just by looking at the presentation and, well, messing around with the generators and relators. We can actually squeeze out this information without referring to maps at all. But anyway, it happens to be an automorphism group of one of this nice map over here, which doesn't just have dualities, but it's also kaleidoscopic, which was something that Steve was not considering at the time. A few remarks about the method. It's what some people call homological voltage assignments, modulo n, but this time taken on corners of a map. And again, the theory of such voltage assignments has been developed by Martin Romand, and actually there's also a paper of the three of us together with Bruce Richter, which developed some part of this theory. It's actually equivalent if you are familiar with the stuff, equivalent with working with what I would call unit vectors assignment in this group over here, where beta is the Betti number of the medial graph of the map. So that's the number of beta. Anyway, just a remark of how this was done. The consequence is that we know the structure of the automorphism group of the derived map, in a sense. Just semi-direct product, and the most funny thing is that the growth of those things is just enormous. So, for example, our theorem, together with Marston's list, give kaleidoscopic regular maps with trinity symmetry for the following degrees and orders of automorphism groups. Now, if you look at the exponents here, you see what it's doing. It's quite fun to work with maps of automorphism groups of this order. Anyway, those things of order 128 n to the 33 are actually interesting. So the first member of this family would be a map of degree 8 and phase length 8, since it's kaleidoscopic with all dualities. And the group has order 128. It's again a starting group of another infinite family, which I'm going to tell you about. I should also say that this result extends also to non-orientable maps. There is no problem with that. But we just have a very few examples in this case. For example, Marston's list gives just a few such maps of degree 6, 10, and 12. Well, I'm not sure, Marston, about your new list where you go up to I don't know what, but that's referring to this list of regular maps up to genus, non-orientable genus 200. Okay. And the smallest one starts an infinite family of maps of degree 6 n and groups of this order, again 120 n to the 31st. Well, the order grows enormously because once you do the medial graph, you introduce a lot of new things and this voltage assignment then explodes in terms of the number of vertices of the new map. Anyway, that's that. Okay. Yeah, we don't know much more. Now, last, let me mention groups generated by exponents and self-dualities. So if you have a kaleidoscopic regular map of degree D with trinity symmetry given by this group, what can you actually say about this group that I am going to call the group of external automorphisms? So it's a group generated by the two dualities and by all the exponent operators. For the family of maps we have in our paper with Dan Archdeacon and Marston Konda, that's the family M of N, we actually calculated explicitly the group X M of N. And if you just look at the order and at the denominator where this power takes various values, you can see that there is some sort of funny behavior about this. Okay, so but that's again just computation of these external automorphism groups for a perfectly defined family. What happens in general, for example, a natural question would be to ask whether the order of XM is bounded by a function of your degree. And the answer is no. It behaves rather strangely, and this is something that Marston came up with, and it's going to be in a paper which is still under preparation. And it says that there is an infinite family of finite kaleidoscopic regular maps of degree 8 with trinity symmetries of all possible external symmetries that you can think of, whose external symmetry groups have orders tending to infinity. So even for degree 8, it just starts off to infinity. Okay. Okay, maybe I shouldn't talk about this more. But maybe I should say at least spend a minute about the construction. So basically what you do is you take this map I mentioned before, so a regular map, kaleidoscopic regular map with trinity symmetry of degree 8 and phase length 8, with the on the group of order 128, and what you do there, you identify a subgroup generated by 8 generators subject to 16 relations, and all those 16 relations are symmetric in the sense that the total exponent on any letter that appears there is zero. So this means that if you do the abelianization of this subgroup, which is actually the map subgroup of this map I spoke about, that gives you the quotient map of order 128. So if you do the abelianization of that funny subgroup, it's just z in the power of 16. So it's a direct product of 16 copies of z. And then when you mess around further with this map, you just discover what this theorem says. And that's actually Marston's mastery of doing things with magma and combining it with explicit computations. So this is a funny outcome. And those findings generate a number of open problems. For example, what's the natural definition of external symmetry of a regular map? You may simply say that it's going to just be any automorphism of my automorphism group of the map. That's a little unsatisfactory since we know cases where this is actually bigger than the group X as I defined it. So the group is actually generated by the dualities and by the exponents. And then it's not clear what's the geometrical interpretation of those extra automorphisms. But there may be some nice interpretation. I just don't know. Also, we don't know any example of a finite kaleidoscopic regular map with trinity symmetry of odd degree. We just don't know. All we have is even degrees. Now, can this theorem about unboundedness of the external symmetry group of a kaleidoscopic regular map of a given degree extends to every other even degree? It probably can, but it's just not clear how to do that. Now, what can you say about the structure of the external symmetry group in general, say as I defined it? So the structure of the group generated by dualities and by the exponents. Well, nothing is known at the moment about this, except of a few facts I presented here. Okay, so lots of open questions. It's good stuff to work on, and I thank you for your attention.